From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made inside the walls of Rochester's animal shelter on Verona Street. In recent months, the shelter has made headlines as it has navigated a number of challenges, from overcrowding to a virus outbreak to key staff resignations. Activists have said that these problems and others have been an issue for years. Shelter staff and the city of Rochester say some of the issues are tied to national trends, with more people surrendering animals as they, for example, go back to work post-pandemic. But it's safe to say that most people, if not all, who have an opinion about the shelter agree that some changes have to be made. And I'd like to think that no one wants animals to suffer here. For the last several months, our WXXI colleagues, Jasmine Singer, Beth Adams, and Brian Sharp, have been investigating the situation. They've shared what they've learned in a three-part series that you might have heard on Morning Edition and All Things Considered. And if you haven't, you're going to hear it on the program, as that will set up a conversation about this issue. The issue is not meant just to rehash the reporting, but to explore what comes next here. And as you will hear today, we are going to talk about Verona Street, but this is a challenge for many municipalities. What we've learned from the WXXI reporting is that the way we think about animal shelters is changing. So what responsibilities do municipalities and local leaders and community members have as we navigate these challenges? Taxpayers, too. We discuss all of it with our guest this hour. Brian Sharp, representing the team of reporters, the Investigations Enterprise editor for WXXI News. Thank you for being in studio with us here.
Thanks for having me.
With us in studio is Jennifer Brown, founder and vice chairperson of the Verona Street Animal Society. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Shirley Green is with us. Shirley is commissioner of the Department of Recreation and Human Services at the City of Rochester. Shirley, thank you for making time for the program.
Thank you for having me.
Before we listen to this series, I just want to ask Brian Sharp, you know, is that essentially how it came on the radar? This is, Verona Street is an institution that people know pretty well, but as we just noted here, those who have been concerned about it have been trying to raise an alarm for a while. How did this become something that the team decided we're going to dig in right now?
I think, and really the credit goes to Jasmine and Beth for the reporting on this, and I also don't want to leave out Veronica Volk for the radio piece we're about to hear. But it was all those things you mentioned. It was the virus outbreak. It was the regular calls, the citizen input that we were hearing from folks saying something needed to be done. It was the resignation. So after you have so many things happening, I think that was just sort of coalesced around the idea of like, okay, this is something we need to do. It had been on the radar, I should say, for a good long time. And then when we kind of, I think particularly when we saw the resignations of leadership, it was, as we've said in the piece, it became a pivotal moment for what was going to happen, and we saw that play out during the budget hearings too. So,
well, let's listen to the first piece in that series regarding the issues, the current issues, and what comes next here.
It's a Friday afternoon, and the Rochester Animal Services shelter on Verona Street resonates with the echo of barking dogs. There are several rows of kennels, and they're all occupied. These are large animals, not tiny lap dogs. Their sturdy bodies nearly fill the narrow enclosures, a few of which are soiled with urine. One dog has defecated near his bed. Most of these dogs were surrendered to the shelter or found wandering the city. The shelter took in more than 1,750 dogs over the past year, the most in nearly a decade.
The facility is not equipped to handle these animals.
That's Kristen Brightcross. She worked as the shelter's veterinarian for 9 months.
It's decrepit. It's gross. I mean, I didn't like going in there to work every day.
In addition to the shelter's crowding, multiple issues exist with the building itself. To be clear, the facility routinely passes state inspection, but local officials say it's undersized, underfunded, and outdated. It's a problem Mayor Malik Evans has acknowledged.
It's like a house, and that when you don't invest regularly, this is where we are now.
Shirley Green leads the city department that oversees animal services. She says the city is doing what it can to address concerns with the facility.
What I would ask is to be patient with us, to work with us. Don't beat us up.
Green says they've done some interior painting and reconfigured the lobby. She says the city is looking to hire outside contractors to handle laundry and clean the kennels.
We have had kennels repaired. We've had locks repaired. We are in the process of purchasing brand new kennels because those kennels were placed in the shelter 25 years ago, and they have not been updated.
But there are other pressing needs. New state guidelines go into effect in December of 2025. Among other things, the shelter will be required to provide isolation and quarantine areas for sick animals. The shelter doesn't have these, and Brightcrest says it needed them during recent viral outbreaks among the animals, including a deadly parvovirus outbreak in December of 2023.
In the situation with the parvo, which was really scary to me, I'd never dealt with anything like that before without having proper space for isolation.
11 dogs died, while others were moved to foster homes and other locations to try to contain the spread of the highly infectious disease. So what now? City officials, shelter employees, and animal advocates all agree that the shelter needs to be bigger. According to a 2022 architect's report, an expansion could cost between $6.5 and $28 million. A new shelter could cost over $37 million. Evans isn't ready to decide.
We need to look at the long-term conversation as it relates to animal services and the city's role in animal services. Should the city be in the animal services business? That's another conversation that we can have.
And another is about who will lead going forward. Because the longtime head of Rochester Animal Services, Chris Fitzgerald, who was in the position for nearly 24 years, resigned in February. And Brightcrest, the veterinarian, she quit 2 months later, after less than a year on the job. Jasmine Singer, WXXI News.
So that was part one in the series. Now let's listen to part two, focusing on some of the people who've been doing work on behalf of the animals there.
At a budget meeting this past May, city council members discussed what to do about the Rochester Animal Shelter.
Can you talk to me about how we can prioritize this and possibly consider increasing funding for this?
That's city council member Stanley Martin talking to Mayor Malik Evans.
There's a sense of urgency. We discuss this every day. The current conversations that we're having, do you build a brand new shelter on possibly city land, or do you do extensive renovations to the ones that are there? So before I say which one, I have to make sure that we have all our I's dotted and T's crossed.
This is a decisive moment in a long simmering debate that has become increasingly charged. The shelter has had disease outbreaks and resignation of top leadership. Advocates' calls for change are getting louder. There are strong passions here and conflicts, even among those who have spent years advocating for change.
I just feel like we've been doing this for so long. Why is this so difficult? I guess that's what I don't understand.
That's Maggie Kane. She used to volunteer at the shelter and founded the nonprofit Voiceless of Verona Street 3 years ago. She says she's been badgering city council members for years about a new shelter.
The building was built in 1940. There's nowhere to isolate animals. There's not good infection control in the operating room.
The city will be compelled to address some of those issues. State guidelines go into effect December of 2025 that will require larger kennels and isolation rooms. But this conversation is about more than bricks and mortar.
If you don't have enough resources to staff the operation and fund everything that goes into caring for animals that are in our care, then it doesn't matter what the facility is like.
That's Chris Fitzgerald. He is the former director of Rochester Animal Services. And for 24 years, he says he did truly care about what went on there, sometimes too much.
The challenging job became impossible at some point, and I started to feel the effects personally and physically.
Fitzgerald resigned earlier this year. His separation agreement mentions a dispute with the city, but he says he can't talk publicly about it because the agreement includes a non-disclosure clause.
My vision didn't align with that of the administration.
Fitzgerald says that even though a new, larger shelter would ease the stress of crowding, it wouldn't be a cure-all. For example, right now, the shelter is overseen by the Department of Recreation and Human Services,
In a perfect world, Fitzgerald says he would change that.
I felt it needed to be elevated to be a standalone department and to be resourced the way the mission demanded it be done.
Fitzgerald says he worked toward a community approach, seeing animal services as part of a network, and relied on volunteers, both in the facility and outside of it, like with fostering.
I had a 15-year-old dog.
Enter Ilona Lucifina.
And I knew she was getting near the end.
Yeah.
So I said, I need to foster.
That's when she was introduced to Biggie. He's been with her for 9 months now. Lucifina speaks highly of the support she received from the foster team at Verona Street.
They've paid for everything. And I got to, like, test it. You know, maybe it wasn't a good match. So actually, it was a great opportunity.
Lucifina is one of many volunteers who help keep the shelter going by fostering or walking or cleaning up after the animals there. But there's only so much a volunteer can do. Fitzgerald says the shelter needs systemic change because the needs of Rochester's homeless animal population continue to grow.
There's a shift needs to happen in community-wide acceptance, system-wide acceptance and recognition that it's not just animals or just pets. They're part of the family and they're part of our community.
But for a city with a lot of other challenges and priorities, where do these animals fit into the picture? And Rochester isn't the only community in Monroe County searching for answers. Jasmine Singer, WXXI News.
That's part two, and in this final part of the series, which we'll listen to now, that is that question about what has become a community-wide issue, and not just here. There's a question about what other municipalities are doing or can do in the future. Let's listen.
In Greece, just behind animal control, a new building is going up.
So yeah, this is obviously the animal shelter is well under construction. They put the main foundation in, but the floor...
That's Greece Police Chief Mike Wood. And this is the future site of the Greece Animal Shelter. Wood is proud of the facility, which will include, among other things, a dog run.
So there'll be a fenced area outside for exercising the animals, which you don't take that for granted either at any shelter.
And thanks to new state regulations that go into effect December of next year, the new building will also have space for large kennels and a room to isolate sick animals. Other municipalities, from Chilai to Irondequoit, are upgrading their older facilities. Irondequoit Police Chief Scott Peters says they used COVID relief money for the project.
I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to make sure that animals are humanely being taken care of, but the undue burden that's coming on municipalities is huge.
Peters says it doesn't make sense to duplicate these efforts town to town.
You know, we should be able to have one central depository or central location that we should be able to bring these animals.
Other counties in the state have a centralized animal shelter, usually through contracts with the Humane Society. And there was a time when Rochester did that as well. Lollipop Farm, the Humane Society of Greater Rochester, was once under contract to manage the city's animal services. Lollipop president and CEO Alice Calabrese says that contract ended because it was draining the organization's funds.
It was costing Lollipop Farm more money to run it in the fashion we deemed necessary than the city was willing to reimburse in a contract.
25 years later, the bill is coming due because the city, too, is working through options of renovating and expanding its shelter or building new. The price tag here, though, is much higher. Here's Mayor Malik Evans.
If I come to you and say, I want you to spend $36 million on an animal shelter, you might say, Mayor, but what are you doing at the expense of that, right? So we have to see which makes sense from a cost-benefit perspective.
That is a far different cost-benefit analysis today than it once was. The fact that people would even consider spending all that money on animal care points to a shift in societal values. Instead of viewing animals as property or utility, more people believe in their intrinsic value and are advocating for their well-being.
You don't let them out in the morning and whistle for them in the afternoon to come back home. They're, you know, sleeping on the couch, on the bed. They're part of the fabric and fiber of families.
The way we shelter and adopt out the animals has changed too. And these days, it's more expensive, making cooperation all that more important. Calabrese says even though no formal agreement is in place, Lollipop still works with Rochester Animal Services.
Animal sheltering is a community thing. All shelters really need to work together.
It's those changing attitudes, though, that are driving all of this. The investments, the regulations, the intensity of debate and advocacy, all building to this moment.
It's just always been kind of viewed as something that is like animal work.
That's Chris Fitzgerald, the city's former director of animal services.
It's not to the level of significance of people work.
And it might not be yet, but Evans says everything is on the table. Jasmine Singer, WXXI News.
So that's the three-part series the WXXI reported this week. And now we'll have a conversation about unanswered questions and where this goes next. And I want to ask Jennifer Brown, who's with us in studio, founder and vice chairperson of the Verona Street Animal Society. First, why don't you tell listeners what your role is with the society?
Certainly. So my personal role is now to be vice chair on the board of directors. The organization in and of itself started back in 2005. We created a not-for-profit to support Rochester Animal Services. Being a municipality, it could not fundraise for itself. And so acting as a sibling organization to fundraise on behalf of the shelter, we have, over the last 19 years, raised, you know, a tremendous amount of money to support the programs at Rochester Animal Services to buy medical supplies. We brought a play yard there. We promote adoptions. We run events like Fast and the Furriest. And we do our best to expand the capabilities of the shelter given its current constraints, both from a staffing perspective and a budgetary perspective.
And Jennifer, you heard in the reporting that different municipalities are doing different things, but you've got Chief Peters in Irondequoit saying, hey, I don't think we should have to. I think there should be one central, he called it a depository, a place where animals can go, a centralized shelter. Maybe it should be countywide. Maybe it shouldn't be up to individual municipalities. You heard Mayor Evans say, we're going to have to ask tough questions about, are we going to spend $6 million? Are we going to spend $36 million? Sure. What are we going to take away from? These are not easy calls here. What goes through your mind when you hear that debate, and where do you think we should be in terms of who funds it?
Well, I think it's a very important discussion, and you know, I'm very glad that we're having it. And you know, when we look at animal care and control in and of the city of Rochester, which, as we all know, houses, you know, some of the poorest zip codes in the country, with a very high level of crime, we can certainly appreciate, you know, what the mayor is talking about when he talks about budgetary constraints and where money goes. But in and of itself, animal care and control is a responsibility of municipalities to provide for its constituents, and tax dollars are allocated to it. It's very important. And, you know, we like to think that definitely it is a community problem. I mean, animal care and control and animal welfare is a community problem and responsibility, and that, you know, talks should be had about the most efficient and effective way to fulfill that role. However, when we hear things like, you know, to build a new shelter would cost $36 million, my response to that would be, you know, here we are in post-COVID construction costs, right? At whereas 10 years ago in 2014, we were, you know, asking the city to commit to potentially doing renovations or building a new shelter, and the cost for that build would have been between $11 and $14 million. You know, something that would have been more doable with, you know, with a commitment from the city and then VSAS partnering in a capital campaign.
So different times, and you're saying we are paying the price for waiting?
Basically, yes.
Okay. Shirley Green is the commissioner of the Department of Recreation and Human Services at the City of Rochester. Shirley, you know, I know you've heard the series now. What do you want listeners to understand about the challenges faced at Verona Street?
Again, thank you for having me on today. And so I think what most of the series has talked about is where we are. And I think I would want people to look at where we are trying to move forward. And so when we talk about the fact that we've lost key staff, we're now in a position where we're ready to move forward with a new director soon. When we talk about the funding levels at the shelter, if you looked at the budget this year, we did make some increases in the budget for animal services. when we talk about the facility itself, we all realize that there is a need for a new facility. And what I've said is, what are some of the little things we can do within the facility now? We know we're not going to get a new shelter tomorrow, so let's see what are some of the low-hanging fruit items or some of the things we can take care of. We've talked about some of the interior things that we've done recently. We are in the process of redoing the bringing in new kennels. We also realized that in 2025, there are going to be new regulations. So we had someone come in, I think, at the end of July to do a walkthrough with us to say what are some of the enhancements we need to make by 2025 of December. Again, we know we're not going to have a shelter by December 2025. So we have to plan about how do we do animal care. How do we ensure that our community knows that we're working with them? And doing all of that is where our focus is. What are the things we can do now? I realize that people want a shelter. We all know we need something new. But for us, it's let's do what we can with what we have right now.
Shirley, is it likely in your mind that get beyond right now and get beyond the next 12 to 18 months? Is it? I don't know how much authority you have to lobby the mayor on this or if you have an opinion, but should it be a brand new standalone facility or can the existing structure still work with renovation?
So we've had that conversation with Animal Arts, who did the evaluation for us in 2022. And so they proposed two different items, as you said. Can we do some work with where we are? The current space, we can't do much with. We would have to build around that current space. There are lots in that area. Could we buy some of those spaces and build and add on to that? Or do we start from the ground up? And those are things that Mayor Evans has said. We have to look at all of our options and then make that decision. So both options could be doable. It's a matter of what can we do. And as we talked about with VSAS, once we make that decision, then we can look at that capital campaign. And that will be a big part of whatever decision we make, whether we build where we are, expand the space where we are, or build up. It will still take that capital campaign.
Listeners, if you want to share your thoughts on this, this is not just a story about Verona Street. I mean, it's about Verona Street, but it's about the challenge that municipalities have in making these decisions. And how to choose how to fund something. Can you renovate existing structures? Do you need new? As the reporting in the final part of the series detailed, a lot of municipalities around our area are grappling with this. So if you want to weigh in on it, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. Brian, are there unanswered questions that stand out to you most? I mean, beyond the obvious that we just talked about, which is standalone, brand new structure, you know, what does it cost? But what has to be answered next going forward, do you think?
I mean, I think that's the main thing. And as we mentioned, there's a number of towns who, you know, have tried working toward some kind of shared facility. Henrietta says they're still trying. Chilai says they gave up. Went and built a new facility. It sounds like from what the county said that really it's very difficult to get everybody on the same page because while every municipality is doing at a minimum dog control, some are picking up wildlife, some are doing other things. And so you're not just talking about your shelter, you're talking about your staff that are out in the field and the vehicles and all of that. But it's, you know, you've got towns that are investing tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I want to say that Greece is over $1 million on their facility. so I don't know. I mean, and they're saying that Rondacoit still needs to spend more, and they're hoping that as I think they said, the goalposts don't change, that they get done and they need to do something else. So I think ultimately it's going to need to be, and maybe this is where Rochester can help lead that discussion of getting to some kind of shared center or shared expense because you have a number of other. The interesting thing about this to me is it also brought together so many other things that we're seeing as far as the veterinarian shortage, what's happening with ThriveWell has put a number of these towns into these positions because they privately contracted with facilities, and then Thrive came in, and we've heard about some of the changes that they've made, some of that because of staffing. So I think there's just a long-term discussion where folks need to figure out solutions.
Let me read a statement from Monroe County so listeners understand as we go forward here, whether it's Rochester, Greece, Brighton, Wheatland. I mean, there's discussions happening on animal care everywhere. And the county, through the county's shared services plan in recent years, animal-controlled services and the broader concept of a centralized dog shelter, at least, was part of that plan in recent years. But county spokesperson Gary Walker says that is only feasible if all towns in the county agree. He said, quote, "Not all towns wanted the county to take over this function, but we continue to be willing partners if the towns come to an agreement," end quote. I have a question for you, Brian, which I don't know if you can answer this. And this, the very question, this may annoy Gary Walker, but this won't be the first time I've annoyed Gary Walker, so that's fine. I know I have a good relationship with Gary, and I understand what Gary is saying here. Gary's statement strikes me as being two things. It strikes me as being probably true. You have to have an agreement. All the towns do probably have to agree. And also really convenient for the county, saying, well, we can't do something unless all 19 towns are in agreement, so I guess we have to do nothing. So, again, I think he's probably right, but it also strikes me as convenient. Is that an unfair way to look at that? It might be unfair.
Yeah, I think that's part of the question is who convenes this? Because you have, you know, Henrietta down there is talking with, you mentioned Wheatland. They're like, well, we're talking with Rush and Wheatland, and maybe like we can do like a particular one. Because you've got now Greece, while they're building, their sometimes sole animal control officer is picking up a dog and driving it to the old Chilai facility. So he's now out of service just to get the animal where it needs to be for like a half an hour or more. So there's, it's endlessly complicated in terms of, and you can throw any number of things of, like, say, how they do it, where they locate it, how they staff it, and whether they want someone else to, whether they want to cede that to the county.
Right. And so, again, if Gary Walker, the county's listening, I think it might be an unfair question the way I framed it. I don't know. This is not easy, and somewhere tax dollars are going to have to flow from some source, whether it is every city on their own, whether there's a county top-down approach. And it's not cheap. And Maggie on the phone has a question that I think is for Shirley Green on that subject. Hello, Maggie. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I have one question, one comment. My concern is currently right now at the animal shelter, they're very, very short staffed. I know they don't have a vet. I know they're looking for that. But they need more animal care technicians, and they need a clerk. They need a vet assistant. And I know Dr. Green did request at least for a new ACT, which I think they're funding, but the mayor denied other positions. And my concern is for the staff there that is dying. They're overworked, and they have 60 dogs there and basically three ACTs taking care of the animals. So that's my question. And a comment was, as a former teacher, and I know Shirley worked for the school district, have they thought about possibly looking into one of the schools that are for sale and looking at renovating that and making that into a shelter? That could be an idea, and I don't think it would cost $37 million. So I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you so much.
Okay, Shirley Green's the commissioner of the Department of Recreation and Human Services at the City of Rochester. Go ahead, Shirley.
Okay, so thank you for that question and comment. I will start with the staffing. And so certainly in the budget, there were some asks. And although at the initial time of the budget, those things did not come through, but I can tell you that we just interviewed for the part-time clerk. We are in the process of bringing on additional part-time ACTs. And so what you have to understand is at the budget time, those recommendations may not have come forward at that time. But as the mayor said, even during the budget hearing, we will continue to revisit those areas. And that's exactly what we're doing. And so, again, I would ask that you look and see as we continue to move forward. In terms of the vet, we've advertised for the vet ever since Dr. Brakes left. And you mentioned it yourself that there's a shortage in vets everywhere, not just here in New York State. And so that has been very challenging for us to try to hire a full-time vet. But what we were able to do is to contract with four vets in the area that are either retired or working and willing to pick up some opportunities with us. So we have been doing that, and we will continue to do the contracting with vets as well until we can hire a vet. We are even considering if it's more feasible to hire part-time vets who are retired and may not want to work full-time but are willing to work part-time. So we recognize that shortage, and we are thinking outside of the box in terms of how do we fill the need. We continue to work with our partners at Lollipop as well in terms of veterinary care.
Thank you very much for the question, Maggie. Again, listeners, 844-295-TALK. If you want to weigh in, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. My colleague Brian Sharp pointed out, you know, there's obvious nuts and bolts questions that are just going to have to be addressed at some point. You know, how much is the city going to spend? How much would other municipalities spend if they're going to address animal care more rigorously, or to deal with, it's new state regulations, right, Brian, which are coming next year?
Yeah, I think it's December 15th they have to have it done. The main ones being changes in kennel size and different prescriptions of what that is supposed to be, excuse me, and then these isolation areas for when you have viruses or disease outbreaks.
Sure. And so those are they're straightforward. They're not easy. They're complicated questions. But separate to that is a question that comes to my mind from listening to the final piece in the series. And you heard WXXI's Jasmine Singer say that, you know, we started to see, in her words, a societal shift where people are valuing animals more than they used to, or more like they value human life. And I think that may be true. I don't know what the data says on that. But I will say that what it calls to mind for me is a book by a Scottish philosopher named Will MacCaskill. It's called What We Owe the Future. MacCaskill is somebody who cares very deeply about animal welfare and thinks that, you know, when we look back on current times, we will feel some shame over how the animals that we eat were treated, the animals that we raise were treated. But he also says every time human beings decide we're going to fund a homeless shelter for human beings, a shelter for animals, a dedicated dog shelter, a more general shelter, that's a values choice. And he said, people don't think of it this way, but you know, you can literally ask yourself, would you save 100 chickens before you would save one person? Are you the type of person who would say, look, until homelessness is cured, we shouldn't spend any tax dollars on animals? Do you think it should be 1-to-1? And that is effectively what these conversations are about. So I think Jasmine's line in the last piece was a little murky, and I don't know that we've got good data on this, but let me ask our guests, and I'll ask Jennifer Brown, founder and vice chairperson of the Verona Street Animal Society. Do you think we are moving in a direction where people are valuing animals closer to the way we'd value human beings? I mean, I know it feels strange to put like how many dogs would you say? I mean, I'm not trying to create an equation, but effectively we have to think in a prioritization way. How much taxpayer money should go towards a homeless shelter for people? How much towards dogs? How much towards animals? How do you see that?
Well, I mean, I think it's a very interesting question, and it takes me back to a proverb that I'm sure I'm not going to express correctly, but it's that idea of both giving somebody a fish when they're hungry and teaching them to fish. So if we are concerned about animal welfare and we're allocating some funds to animal welfare, you might say, okay, well, then you're addressing that, but you're not addressing something else. And so, you know, we look at it as, you know, raising a compassionate society in and of itself. You look at the most vulnerable among us, animals, children, seniors, and you think about what it is both to address current societal views of animal care, right now, and pulling animals off the street and putting them into a shelter and taking care of them. But how do you teach compassion going forward that would regulate animal populations going forward that would teach, you know, compassion to children so that as they grow up in the world that they live in is dictated by those views, those compassionate views. You know, are we in a more peaceful world? Are we in a world where we see less domestic violence, where people manage stress better? We view those, you know, those things together when we look about, when we look at animal care and control and we think about the shelter, we think about the population of the city and the challenges, you know, that we face as a city societally. And then I think about a kid and their dog. And, you know, in the midst of stress and chaos and violence, what it means to a child to have that animal, to learn to care for them, to have that compassion, to raise them, to feel safe with them. And then they grow up to be an adult, and what decisions are they making in the world?
Let me follow this point with Jennifer before I turn to Shirley on this. What would you say to someone who would argue, hey, if you have a human being who's unhoused, and there are plenty in Rochester, it's plenty everywhere. Mm-hmm. That should be much more of a priority for a municipality than a dog that's unhoused, than a cat that's unhoused. What would you say?
Sure. Well, I would say that, you know, our lives are intertwined with animals. I think, you know, as presented, you know, in this series, you heard quotes where people talked about animals being members of the family. You know, I don't really think that having to do an if-or comparison serves people at all. I've seen plenty of homeless people who, you know, care for their animals in the way that someone who has a 5,000 square foot house doesn't. I see them giving food to their animals instead of feeding themselves. You know, it is really just a matter of general care and compassion to the world that we live in.
Yeah, I take that point. The reason I think that my mind is currently on this frame of thinking is partially because Mayor Malik Evans has said, and we heard it in the pieces, if you're going to spend $36 million before we do that, do you want us to do that? And does that mean if we can't do X, Y, Z, is that okay with you? And that may mean something with human services. That may mean some other sort of build or social support. And it may mean a yes to this and no to that. That's possible, right?
It is possible. But then, so if we were to not look at it in an esoteric fashion and we weren't even to think about value systems, but let's look at it numerically. So in the city of Austin, they created Pets Alive in the early 2000s because they had had a pet overpopulation problem and they wanted to make this commitment to get all the pets off the street and to have this 100% save rate and 90% save rate. And it cost them a lot of money to do this and it took several years to do it. And there were times when, you know, they had to really struggle to cover that bill in order to care for these animals and kind of change the societal fabric of that city. And then, you know, here comes along Google. And Google is looking for a place to relocate their office. And they're going to open up this large branch office, which, as we know, is going to bring jobs and is going to bring dollars. And the executives there said that one of the three top factors for why they chose Austin was because of their progressive animal care and control views. So you could say to yourself, you know, what is the city of Rochester bringing to the table that will attract business, that will attract dollars, that will attract people to want to move here, to bring industry, that will help, you know, bring a larger tax base, which will bring more resources, which will allow the city to be able to do more of the things that they need to do. And I believe that animal care and control is one of those things.
Shirley, how do you see this question on whether we are, as a society, starting to put more priority than we used to into animals and treating them with priority more similarly to human beings?
So I would certainly think we are that, and we hear it often that animals or the pets are part of the family. And so we do have to recognize that many of our families see their pets as their family members. And so we have to make sure we're keeping that in the forethought of our minds when we're having these conversations. I also agree that it can't be an if this one or that one. We have to look at it holistically. How do we take care of all the necessities within the city, and how do we prioritize those over time? And certainly, in my short 2 years, Animal Services has been in the forefront of this administration. We have heard the concerns, and we continuously try to address them. And again, I have to say that it's not an overnight fix. This has been a conversation at least for the last 2 years that I've been here, and we have to look and see how can we chip away at many of those issues without saying we're going to take this from that and give it to this or vice versa.
Let me get back to some of your feedback. I'll get phone calls in a second. I'm just going to read this email from Debbie, who says, I just wanted to thank the staff at Verona for my Gracie, a three-footed Maltese mix I got 8 years ago. We were a great match, and she spends waking and sleeping hours at my side. I love her funny self, and she's made my life richer. You have a thankless job at the mercy of tax revenue at administrations in a city with a huge need. So thank you. That is from Debbie. Debbie, I'm glad that you've got that wonderful Gracie by your side. I do have a little bit of data in front of me, Jennifer Brown. Does this sound correct that if you go back 20 years ago, more dogs and cats were being euthanized at Verona than were being reclaimed, adopted, or transferred? I don't know if that has changed over time, yes?
It has. So back in 2001, the shelter took in 4,000 dogs and was able to adopt out 2,000 dogs. The shelter also took in 3,000 cats and was able to adopt out 1,500 cats. You know, so over time, thanks to, you know, the hard work of everyone at that shelter, the live adoption rate, the successful adoption rate level has gone up to, at times, over 90%. Yeah. You know, back in 2018, I think it was, you know, 89%+. And that is really due to the incredible staff that works at the shelter, how they have worked tirelessly to look for innovative ways to help the animals, whether it's through the play yard, doing behavioral assessments, removing breed-specific designations, you know, a lot of programs. I mean, they've had programs where kids in the inner city come into the shelter with a book and they, you know, if they have trouble reading, they'll sit in front of a kennel with a dog, and the dog is not intimidating to the child, and they sit there and they read to them, and it helps them with their reading skills. I mean, and that helps the dog, helps them with socialization, and, you know, they have done a tremendous amount of innovative things to make that possible.
Let me get to your phone calls. We've got a bunch. Paula in Fairport. Hello, Paula. Go ahead.
Hello. I missed the first half of the program, so I may be saying something that's already been said. Everything we talk about is important. I love everything they're doing. It's amazing. But we've got to do a grassroots program to get people to understand that dogs aren't toys. You can't get a dog and then throw it away. You've got to spay and neuter. We've got to do something about backyard breeders who are just putting more and more dogs out there. I know there's state spay and neuter programs, but I don't know anything about them. So I imagine there are plenty of people who don't, but we need some kind of a county-wide program to convince people that their dogs need to be neutered.
Okay, well, so a couple of points there. Let me just ask Shirley Green first. You've got you've got a concern here about backyard breeders. How concerned are you about that, Shirley?
So we hear from many residents about it, and we do have animal control officers checking into those concerns that come in. We also work with the Humane Society. But I think what that caller is talking about is really about education. We have to educate the community, and again, not just the city, but across the county, about some of the concerns that she just raised in terms of the care of your animals. They're not just toys. You can't throw them away. How do we educate our community about how to take care of your pets, how to make sure we do? I know many of our advocates talk about the shelter because we're not spaying and neutering our animals as they go out because of our vet shortage. But when we get caught up on those things, how do we make sure we educate our community about why that's important? And so there's a whole component that I would say that as a community we can do to better educate the community about what that caller just spoke about.
Brian Sharp, we handled that there?
Yeah, that's actually what I was going to ask Dr. Green about, was just because I think that there's so many components to this, and one of the issues with the turnover and the budget issues and getting vets in there is that point that, you know, we're adopting out animals that are not spayed and neutered right now, and what that could mean coming back for us sort of down the road.
I see Jennifer nodding, by the way. Do you think we should be adopting out animals that are not spayed and neutered?
Well, it's a very complicated, you know, question, because you don't want to not adopt out animals. You don't want to have to euthanize for that reason. But it, you know, it's challenging to put out animals that are intact. You know, male dogs that are intact mark, the female dogs that are intact go into heat. And so, you know, animals are being returned to the shelter because they are still intact and they have these other issues. Mm. But that's the spay and neuter issue overall is back to the spay and neuter now, so that down the road there are less animals.
Okay. Do you agree with Dr. Green that part of it's an education issue?
Certainly. I certainly think that there's a lot of opportunity for education around animals being spayed and neutered.
Okay. And I got an email from Kristen who just wanted to make sure she understood Dr. Green's answer on the question of whether schools that have been handed back over to the city recently due to the reconfiguration, would they be considered for a future animal facility? Just want to get some clarity there. Shirley?
So I do recall that coming from, I think, Maggie Kane, and I did not respond to that. I apologize for that. And so, as you know, when the school district turns over the buildings, they turn them back over to the city, and there's a process to go through to make those determinations what those buildings would be used for. And so I think that can fall into the same conversation that the mayor has said. Do we take an existing place and rebuild and build there? Do we use the existing space, or do we build from the ground? So that could play into when we make that decision. What's the best way to get a new shelter? Certainly that can be an option as well. But as we said, there's been no decision on which of the three options we're going to go with. And then once that is finalized, we'll share that with the community. And certainly a capital campaign will be needed, even if it's a building that's existing. Because you think about a school building, all the things that Animal Arts recommended would have to be retrofit into even a school, an existing building.
What questions do you still have, Jennifer? You know, we've talked about so many different ideas about how this gets funded or where this goes. Is it a possible school building? I mean, there's a lot that we don't know. What is top of mind for you that you want to see answered in the short term as possible?
In the short term as possible. I mean, obviously, you know, we certainly want the city to be successful in its pursuit of a vet. I think, you know, the vet role, even if the city determines that perhaps they need to increase the budget for that salary in order to attract a vet, that role is so critical. You know, that role manages all the animals that come into the shelter, doing initial assessments on their well-being. You know, a dog can be hit and someone will bring that hit dog to the shelter, you know, to be looked at. I mean, when you think that vet is doing spay and neuter for every animal that goes out, so think about the lives that are being saved in the future and, you know, controlling the pet population, as well as people in the community being able to come to the shelter if they needed some sort of simple medical procedure. I mean, the shelter services tens of thousands of people and their pets. So that one role is so so incredibly important to the community at large. So that would be my number one. My number two would be how, you know, we could get the shelter to meet those December 2025 goals. It just seems with the current footprint of the building, currently we are way beyond capacity. Dogs are in single-sided kennels instead of double-sided kennels as required. The kennels in and of themselves are too small and would need to be enlarged to meet those requirements. And they don't have the square footage to accommodate that. They also don't have the square footage to accommodate any isolation locations as required by that. And so it just seems like, you know, it's almost an impossibility to make that shelter meet those December 2025 directives without reducing capacity greatly. And as you can see where it's at with capacity, it's only increasing right now.
Shirley, anything you want to add before we let you go?
No, I think she's in terms of us meeting the 2025 new regulations, that is our number one priority. We originally, our priority was around getting a director. We have that in place. That moved. That's moving along. Our second priority was to make sure we can meet the 2025 regulations. We're in the process of working with a consultant who came to do a walkthrough of the shelter. And then my third one, which everyone hears us talk about, is we do need a full-time vet. We will continue to do cast the net as far as possible to try to find a vet. But in the meantime, we will continue to contract with the vets that are in the area that's willing to work with us.
Shirley, you're generous with your time, and I want to thank you for making time for the program today.
I appreciate it.
Dr. Shirley Green is Commissioner of the Department of Recreation and Human Services at the City of Rochester. Brian Sharp, you and the team have done excellent work on this. I know you're going to stay on top of it, but thank you for bringing this reporting series to us this week.
Thank you. And I just tell folks to check out WXXINews.org. It also has more details as well as the full radio story in our report there.
And as we bid farewell to Jennifer Brown, founder and vice chairperson of Verona Street Animal Society, I'm looking at a picture that WXXI's Max Schulte took of Paul Finn, who's volunteered for 8 years at Verona, trying to get Ruby, a stray dog, out of her kennel. It took about half an hour sitting with her to get her to have the trust to just come out of the kennel. And there is something really, really touching about this photo that Max has. And it's just one moment, but there's so many people who are, their names aren't going to get mentioned, who care very deeply and have done great work. So thanks to everybody who loves those animals. Thanks for what you're doing, and keep us in touch on these issues in the future.
Thank you so much.
And WXXINews.org for the full reporting series. From the whole team at Connections, thank you for listening. We're back with you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.